we need to talk about ideas, good ones and bad ones. We need to learn stuff about the world. We need an honest, intelligent, thought-provoking, and entertaining review of what the hell happened on this planet in the last 7 days. We need to sit back and listen to the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, dear listener, to a special episode of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. On this occasion, no velvet glove, but I have with me an old friend who I'll call Right Wing Tony. And I've known Tony a long time. He has some interesting ideas, and we decided to get together and talk about Section 18C and all matters pertaining to that. So sit back and relax for a special episode of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove with Right Wing Tony. Dear listener, I have with me a new guest for the show, and we'll call him Right Wing Tony, and you'll understand why in a few moments when you listen to him. Tony, thanks for joining the podcast. How are you?
Absolute pleasure, Mr. Fist.
That's good. I've invited Tony over for dinner. We've had a few wines, we've had a bit of pork, and we're feeling quite merry, so we decided to record a bit of a podcast. Tony's area of specialty, or one of them, is...
this week.
Yeah. Is 18C. And I mentioned to Tony that I saw an article in relation to 18C and what Bill Shorten had to say. And I'll just... I'll quote a bit from this article and then we'll have a bit of a chat about 18C. But Labor is attempting to mobilise ethnic communities against the Liberal Party's latest push to water down legal protections against hate speech enshrined in 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act. So there's been talk. Malcolm Turnbull and the Attorney General Brandis, they've decided 18C needs to be watered down. And surprise, surprise, really, Bill Shorten has come out and he's saying he doesn't want 18C to be watered down. And last week, there were a bunch of community groups, Hellenic Council, Executive Council of Australian Jewry, Arab Council Australia, Lebanese Muslim Association, Chinese Australia Forum, Armenian National Committee, and United Indian Association, no less, all issued a statement criticising the Turnbull government's move to consider a change to 18C, and Bill Shorten is urging those communities to tell Mr. Turnbull and the Liberals that no one has the right to be a bigot. So basically, as a bit of a refresher, dear listener, 18C says it's unlawful for a person to do an act which might reasonably in all circumstances offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate another person. Liberal Party's looking to water that down. Bill Shorten says leave it as it is. Right Wing Tony, what's your view?
Well, it's contentious, there's no doubt about that, but... I suppose the best way to come to grips with 18C is to think about the history of it. And if we look at that quickly, the beginning was 1975 and Comrade Gough Whitlam introduced the legislation. Now, he was a legendary Prime Minister who had to be physically removed from office for the sake of the Commonwealth. So he brought it in. With all good things like that, you need an activist to actually work the legislation through, and that is Commissioner Triggs. She's the activist who has presided over all of the problems that we currently have. 18C hasn't been a problem until Gillian Triggs was the commissioner.
So is there in its current form since
correct.
Gough?
Yeah, it's been right. There since then.
Right.
And it's never really created any difficulties. But then we go to, well, how did Gillian Triggs get there? Comrade Julia Gillard got her in. So it doesn't surprise me in the slightest that the opportunist, Bill Shorten, has arrived on the scene and he has decided to lend his weight to all of this and to stir up issues with a whole heap of ethnic groups. And Bill is the ultimate opportunist. I thought I'd heard everything about Bill and I'd seen how deep he could plumb until the last federal election, but I was absolutely gobsmacked when I heard him in a radio interview tell us about his family. Now, I've always known with socialists that they aspire to remove other people's property and their money, but he took it to a new level. He actually removed another man's children. Bill is on the record as saying he was the father of three. He isn't. He's the father of one. He's the stepfather of two. And God knows how poor the real father of the other two children felt to find that Bill was out spruiking, saying he was the father of three. So that's the background to...
Right-wing Tony, back to Section 18C. You've diverted there.
You do need to understand...
You've digressed.
The players, because these are the players. We've got Gough, Julia, now Bill.
Yes.
Now, a layman's view of 18C is that it basically allows subjective offence to trump a public truth. And that's from an editorial in The Australian on the 18th of November this month. Bill Leak, who has been a victim of the misapplication of 18C, suffered because it creates a perverse state of affairs when a truth-telling cartoonist is pursued while no complaint is made about the expert opinion that Indigenous people are inherently violent and abusive by virtue of their culture. So what 18C basically allows people to attack people who tell the truth. And the fact that you're telling the truth is irrelevant. Yes. And there's some other interesting sections. 18C shouldn't be looked at by itself. If you look at 18B, as regards the reason for doing an act, this is quite instructive. It says, if an act is done for two or more reasons, and one of those reasons is the race, colour, or national or ethnic origin of a person, then for the purposes of this part, that act is taken to be done because of the person's race, colour, or national or ethnic origin. So we've got two reasons. Now, I say, well, what if the other reason is that it's the truth, what's being said? Yet, it's irrelevant that it's the truth. You are deemed to have made the statement that creates the difficulty or the controversy because of the person's race, colour, national or ethnic origin. Now, there is a defence to 18C. That's happily spoken about by Bill and the leftist claptrap, and they refer us to 18D. And 18D says, 18C does not render unlawful anything said or done reasonably and in good faith because of certain things. And it may appear in an artistic work or in some other dissemination. Now, the difficulty with that is that, once again, there's no mention of the truth. So you could say something that's true about someone, but it still may offend 18C if it isn't reasonable and in good faith. Now, that opens the door to judicial discretion, because what's reasonable? You could ask one person on the street or another person and you get two different answers. If you ask an accountant, you might get three different answers. Who knows? What's good faith? That's totally subjective yet again. So the protection that they bang on about in 18D just isn't there, because it's not an objective test. At the end of the day, it's a subjective test that could only be determined by a tribunal. Hence what happened to the three students or half a dozen students at QUT and Bill Leak. That they've said and done things and they fall foul of 18C.
Let me play devil's advocate for a bit. So somebody who is sort of arguing on behalf of the Human Rights Commission would say, well, it's not up to the Human Rights Commission to start a legal action. That complainant in the QUT case, she did that after the conciliation failed, and it went to court and was thrown out. And since Gough introduced the legislation, there's been three instances of any note, namely the QUT case, the Bill Leak case, and the Bolt case. Mm. So three sort of controversial decisions in the last 35 odd years. What's the problem?
All on Gillian Triggs' watch.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
Mark Liebler, who is an outstanding Jewish lawyer and well known in the Australian community, basically said that the HRC, the Human Rights Commission, have misadministered both the QUT and the Bill Leak matters. And he said that earlier this week in an article published in The Australian, November 14, and in other places. And his reason was that Triggs had the power to investigate and terminate these complaints if they lack substance.
So she could terminate the conciliation process, but she couldn't stop or prevent a separate court action, which is what the Aboriginal woman did in the QUT case.
Correct, but if she had have exercised the discretion that was vested in her to terminate the complaint,
yes,
then red lights would have been flashing to all the players on the field,
yes,
that this won't fly. Yeah. That in the opinion of a person who knows or ought to know,
yes,
most about these matters, that it lacks substance. And that's what Mark Liebler says ought to have occurred. But that didn't occur. Gillian Triggs has waved them through. In fact, her offsider, in relation to, well, she's defended him, Tim, and I apologise because I can't pronounce it, South Opsane, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
He actually trawled for complaints in relation to Bill Leak.
Right.
He went on the front foot because, yes, no one had complained at that stage, and in the absence of a complaint,
right,
that wasn't good enough for good Tim or Gillian. They actually had to be active, and they were looking for complaints. So they went to the marketplace and made it public that if anyone was offended, they were there to pick up the cudgels for,
right,
that person. And as a consequence of Tim's activities, there was a complaint by a girl who subsequently withdrew the complaint. And then, not being happy with it, it appears that two lawyers employed by Legal Aid and WA got in a Toyota Land Cruiser or whatever and travelled to a remote part of Western Australia in an effort to find two people that were prepared to complain, and they managed to find two gentlemen in that remote part of Australia who, after whatever discussion occurred between them and the lawyers, decided that it was worth complaining about. So they filed a complaint, and it subsequently appears from press reports that those two gentlemen have now decided that they really didn't want to complain about it at all. It's a really difficult area, and it's a very dangerous area. There's another section that I think, Mr. Fish, you should know about, and that's Section 18E.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of 18B, and I haven't heard of 18E before, yeah, so well, 18E, this is good.
18E's a cracker as well.
Yeah.
Because it says, subject to subsection 2, if an employee or agent of a person does an act in connection with his or her duties as an employee or agent, and that act would be unlawful under this part,
yes,
if it were done by that person, then this act applies in relation to the employer, as if the employer had also done that act.
So it's a vicarious liability, correct, by statute.
Yeah, yeah, but it gets a little bit better, because, yeah, the carve-out in subsection 2 is, subsection 1 does not apply to an act done by an employer agent of a person if it is established that the person took all reasonable steps to prevent this occurring.
Right.
Now, the two problems with that are, firstly, that it is established, so there's a reversal of the onus of proof.
Yes.
So the employer has to make a case to satisfy the commission, which is what occurred with Bill Leak, the Australian as his employer.
The newspaper is vicariously liable for the employee's actions unless they can prove otherwise.
Correct.
Yep.
But the clincher is that the test is that they must have taken all reasonable steps to prevent it. Not taken reasonable steps. Yes. All reasonable steps. So here we go again.
He should have had some he should have had some on-the-job counselling as to his obligations under the Act, perhaps.
No, because he was telling the truth,
right.
And it's clearly the truth. But you see, what are all reasonable steps? Like, this is crazy stuff. You get to a situation where you're obliged to prove to somebody else that you have done everything humanly possible to stop something occurring.
Mm.
I can understand if the tests were taking reasonable steps, but all reasonable steps is probably a test you can't meet in reality. And if you take it off to the judiciary, then depending on who you got, the decision would be different.
So
and if you've got the money for an appeal...
Mm.
As we saw with the Baden Clay case recently, with the Court of Appeal here, they were rolled by the High Court of Australia.
Mm.
So there's no certainty in any of this.
Mm.
The thing is a mess. It's misadministered. Until we had the current commissioner, it was fine, it seemed. It wasn't creating major difficulties or disturbances.
Mm.
But Comrade Gillard picked a winner.
So right-wing Tony, the current ANC says unlawful to offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate.
Yeah.
Is any of that worth saving?
No, because offend, I looked at the Oxford Dictionary,
yes,
says cause to feel upset, annoyed or resentful.
Yep.
Well, that probably happens most nights when you watch the ABC. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary, which is the US equivalent, says causes a person to feel hurt, angry or upset. Well, once again, there you go. Insult,
yes.
Speak to or treat with disrespect or scornful advice, it seems. Humiliate is to make someone feel ashamed and foolish.
Yes.
Well, perhaps telling some people the truth could make them feel ashamed and foolish. But it's still the truth.
Indeed.
And they ought to be told.
Indeed.
So there you go. Vilify. Yes. Commissioner Triggs.
Yes.
Slip of the tongue there. Suggests the word vilify.
Yes. It's not much different, is it?
And it really isn't any different.
Mm.
And her track record, truly, she's 71 and she needs to put the pool cue back in the rack. Take her lips off the government teat and disappear.
Right, Tony. Here's a proposal to you. What if it was, say, a prohibition against inciting violence? Like somebody saying, "Come on, everybody, get your pickaxes and your other weapons. We're heading down to Hyde Park tomorrow to bash the Jews."
We don't need 18C for that because that would be an offence under most criminal codes in the Commonwealth of Australia and probably under the Commonwealth Crimes Act. This is all about hate speech.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, where we need to really consider the future of 18C is in relation to political correctness.
Mm.
And where we're going with that. I had the opportunity of looking at an article that a fellow called Peter Baldwin had written in September 1718 this year in The Australian. Peter, I can remind you all, was a minister in the Hawke and Keating Labor governments.
I'm a bit worried, right-wing Tony, when you're quoting from The Australian regularly. But we'll
let
that go.
Can I say this to you? It's probably the only place where you're going to get any balance because if you listen to the Australian Biased Commission or the Broadcasting Commission for Bias, you're not going to get anything much there that'll educate you. He basically says that there's a move afoot now which is, he describes, as the leftist counter-enlightenment. During the Enlightenment period, there was a vision that people are seen as members of a common humanity, each possessing rationality and agency and not just creatures of a particular cultural or religious milieu into which they're born. Now, that's all been basically by this sort of legislation and the leftist politically correct agenda, which is driven by all sorts of sympathetic media people and artists.
So it's a reference to identity, victimhood.
Correct. Mm. And he basically says, if identity politics is a substantive part of this mutant ideology, the compliance and enforcement arm is the system of thought control we nowadays term political correctness. So 18C has been basically turned from what it was intended to be into a weapon of political correctness. Now, Bill Leake, who was the victim of this regime, calls this political correctness, he gives it an acronym, CTAD. And what he says that means is chronic truth aversion disorder. And it's alive. It's got a pulse.
Yes.
And it's beating.
Chronic truth aversion disorder. CTAD. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And that's, Bill Leake said that again in an article in The Australian, August 5 this year. Now, this is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just here. But this phenomenon gives rise to what we've seen with Brexit and Trump, that ordinary people who have oodles of common sense when compared with tertiary educated left-wing propagandists have turfed them out. Brexit has happened. It's a fact.
Yes.
They're all astonished and they're nervous. Mm-hmm. And Trump has terrified them all.
Mm.
And Peter Baldwin in his article refers to what's going on in the US. And he says there are currently calls at Ivy League colleges. Now, this is Stanford and Harvard, for the right to free speech to be supplanted by the insistence on socially just speech. Mm. So that's where 18C is taking us, that you cannot tell the truth if it hurts somebody or it offends them or it humiliates them. Now, I had the opportunity, and it was a great opportunity Thursday this week, to listen to a talk at the National Press Club that Marcia Langton and two other gifted Aboriginal ladies spoke at, and it was about Indigenous violence in their communities. And it was very clear to me that had anyone other than them said what they said,
yes,
that the Human Rights Commission would have been all over those people like a bad rash.
Yes.
It would have been really bad. The leftist press would have been out, the ABC would have been apoplectic, and the talking heads would have been wobbling.
Because presumably they were saying things which were blaming members of the Aboriginal men for the treatment of women.
Not all Aboriginal men, but they were saying it's a significant problem.
And it was a cultural problem.
It needs to be addressed. Yeah. And that the state has worked itself into such a frenzy that we are now saying we won't interfere with what's going on because it's culturally inappropriate to interfere.
Mm.
So the natural consequence of that is that Aboriginal women and children are being abused, but the state is deciding to step away from that because it would be culturally inappropriate to intervene. And Marcia Langton and the two other speakers called on the government to show some courage, roll their sleeves up, and incarcerate. And Marcia had some very good statistics on Aboriginal men that were in custody, and the percentage of Aboriginal men that were in custody as a consequence of violence to women and children. And it is horrific, given what I heard. It is absolutely horrific what's going on.
Mm.
Now, as I said before,
By the way, right wing Tony, I'm impressed that you've segued from an 18C to an Aboriginal.
No. But
rant. This is good.
I need to say that this is all part of where I'm going to get to with this is that there's a thing afoot here.
They're tied in together. I'm with
and
you.
And it all comes together.
I'm saying I'm impressed.
At the end.
Yep, keep going.
Well.
Dear listener, not too long ago, you looked at your podcast app and saw that a new episode of the Iron Fist and Velvet Glove podcast was available to download. Did you silently think to yourself, great, a new podcast. I like listening to those guys. If so, then you qualify as a potential donor to the podcast. Your donation will help cover some expenses, but more importantly, your donation tells the boys that they are on the right track and to keep up the good work. A dollar a show is all they ask. Go to their website at ironfistvelvetglove.com.au and click on the donations link.
We now have a situation, and this is worldwide. Mm. We have now a situation in England, in Muslim communities, where female genital mutilation, if the state tries to attack that more vigorously, notwithstanding it's unlawful, but more vigorously, that is, actually apply the law as opposed to ignoring it, that will be deemed to be an attack on cultural identity.
Mm.
And would offend, obviously, 18C here, if someone decided to lodge a complaint. And Peter Baldwin in his article says, as at September, in Britain, hospitals are reporting an average of 15 cases of this each day.
15 cases of female genital mutilation each day.
Yet there have been...
In the UK.
Correct. There have been no successful prosecutions, despite the practice being illegal since 1984.
Mm.
Then he goes on to talk about the terrible predation that occurred in a part of England where across 16 years, 1,400 girls, mostly from dysfunctional white families, were subjected to sexual abuse by organised gangs of sexual predators that were of Pakistani Muslim background. And as two subsequent official reports disclosed, all arms of government that should have protected the girls, the police, social services, schools, Labour-controlled local council, were paralysed by a dread of being labelled racist or Islamophobic.
Yep.
And that takes us to what Bill Leake said again in August, when he said that the application of this sort of law to people and the hysteria that follows it and the attacks that are levied at people like Bill Leake for speaking the truth...
Mm.
Create a situation that is so hostile that anyone inclined to speak the truth understandably becomes afraid to do so.
Mm.
And that, I think, is what this is all about. That is, a person with a broken will is easy to manipulate. And I think that's part of the agenda here. Part of the agenda of the socialists and the progressive left is to break people down, break their will, not allow you to speak, not allow you to speak openly, and if you do, then the gates of hell open upon you. And what Bill Leake said about in his cartoon about the Aboriginal father was absolutely accurate. Anthony Dillon, who is of Aboriginal descent, Colin Dillon, the policeman in Queensland, the Indigenous policeman that played a major part in the Fitzgerald inquiry, he was the guy that turned in bent coppers and did the right thing and faced a shocking situation in the police force to follow. But Anthony Dillon basically said, in his support of Bill Leake, that why should the offended choose to be offended? Taking offence is a sure way to silence those whose words we don't want to hear. And in terms of the accuracy of what Bill Leake said, the West Australian Police Commissioner, Carl O'Callaghan, went public and cited the arrest in August of a 10-year-old boy in Kalgoorlie whose father refused to come and collect his son.
Mm.
The boy's mother could not be found. The police ended up looking after the child for 12 hours, trying to find a responsible adult, largely because the father of the child refused to take responsibility for him. So they're the problems we face. They're the problems that must be addressed in a progressive and caring community. But what we have is that the moment somebody says something that doesn't sit happily with a progressive left agenda, then they are attacked and viciously attacked, and they're told that 18D will protect them, but the reality with the boys from QUT was that they got letters of demand from a solicitor, and those that hung in there and wouldn't pay because they'd done nothing wrong in the first instance. They'd said nothing about the girls.
So it seems
they talked about the institution.
There were others besides those three who actually settled, didn't they?
Correct. Yes. And they paid the money.
Yes.
And Triggs said that she conciliated with all the boys, and it's later proved that she didn't.
Mm.
It's very clear. No attempt was made by Gillian or Tim, because they were obviously busy on other matters.
Mm.
But in any event, and these kids' futures were in jeopardy. Mm. And had they not got legal advice, and as I understand it, it was on a pro bono basis, but had they not got that, then they would have been hung out to dry.
Mm.
And this is all about political correctness gone mad.
Mm.
It's like on steroids.
Mm. I've been listening to a guy called Gad Saad. Have you ever heard of Gad Saad?
No.
American guy. Actually, he's Canadian.
Saad's a happy enough character.
Well, he's actually a Lebanese Jew who escaped Lebanon and is now living in Canada. And he's a behavioural scientist. Very interesting guy. And he's got lots of stuff on YouTube and things like that people can look up. But he's got a few different theories, and I'll tell you some of them now and see if you like them. But he said that that they're playing a game, that social justice warriors, SJW, you might see for short, the PC Brigade and the regressive left are all playing a game. And this is the game. Step one is you look at a group. Step two, identify who is doing well and who is not. Step three, declare that the winners must be necessarily oppressing the losers. Step four, identify with the losers and demand change. And step five, claim moral superiority and have your ego stroked as a result.
What he's saying is absolutely on the money, but he's not the first person to say it. Like, if you read George Orwell's Animal Farm, then that, to me, is the quintessential story of how socialism works.
Yes.
That they all start out that all animals are equal when they took control of the farm back from the humans, but then imperceptibly the pigs decided, we might live in the house because it'll make it easier.
But what you've got is the social justice warriors will adopt a cause of somebody else who they're not even part of. So he likened this to Munchausen's syndrome. So people would often be familiar with, Munchausen syndrome is where a person fakes an illness to gain attention or sympathy.
But those people are sick. They're actually sick.
Yes.
These people are doing this consciously.
But it demonstrates
they're bad. They're not sick.
It demonstrates a desire from people to have sympathy and have their ego stroked.
Without a doubt.
And Munchausen by proxy is where the caregiver exaggerates or causes illness of someone in their care, which is quite often, you know, their own biological child.
Mm.
And so he's saying that if you're, you know, that's part of the motivation of a social justice warrior is to exaggerate the wrongdoing to a group and demand justice for them. Because people will then say, you are so good for caring about this person.
Mm.
Here I will stroke your ego and provide you sympathy as well. So,
well, I think, Peter Baldwin says much the same in when he was saying that we have all this political correctness in terms of how we can speak about things that are clearly wrong.
Yes.
But it constrains the doing of good, like in the case he gave, the example he gave of the girls who are forced into genital mutilation and the girls that are forced to marry men multiples of their age. That does the group no good that they're seeking to protect, but it still makes them feel good to beat their chest and say they're protecting someone, but they miss the whole point. It's like the feminist movement has completely missed the point that they're supporting
they're valuing
Muslim behaviour, which traduces the role of women and actually physically harms a lot of women.
They're valuing the culture more than the rights of the individuals within the culture.
Yeah. And that, again, is part of the real issue with 18C is, do we value more the right of freedom of speech than the right not to cause someone some sort of offence or being uncomfortable when confronted with the truth? And I've got a book that I've started to read. It's called In Defence of Freedom of Speech by a fellow called Chris Berg. And he basically says that freedom of speech reflects a deeper value which underpins any free society. And he refers to a US Supreme Court judge where he said in a judgment that freedom of speech is the matrix, the indispensable condition of nearly every other form of freedom.
Mm.
And that freedom of speech and freedom of conscience are inseparable. And Mr. Fist, you sent me an article by Peter Grest where a day or so ago, Peter was a fellow we all know who was incarcerated in Egypt for merely plying his trade as a journalist on trumped-up charges. And after considerable time in shocking incarceration, he was released. And Peter Gresta said, notwithstanding all of that, that freedom of speech was the most important freedom. And I believe that's the case. And I actually think that we've got to get rid of these provisions.
Ultimately, people are too easily offended, too easily insulted.
Or if we keep them, then there has to be an absolute defence, and that is that if the truth is spoken, then that's the defence. It doesn't have to be reasonable in the scheme of 18D or the other test that 18D threw up, which was,
But the other
thing, in good faith, it just is the truth. And if the truth hurts, well, we need a resilient society here. We live in tough times and they're going to get tougher. And we need to be able to speak to one another and speak the truth to one another. And if it comes out the wrong way or it causes some offence or some hurt, then the better thing out of all of that is that you can still speak the truth in the Commonwealth of Australia.
And we need to be able to hear these opinions anyway. Like, even if they're a ratbag opinion that's wrong, we're big enough and ugly enough to go, well, that's a load of nonsense.
That's a
truly racist or bigoted opinion.
Correct.
And I now judge
that
person. That
conclusion.
I'll now judge that person, and I now know that person.
That's right. And you'll judge them by what they say and how they behave, and if they commit an offence of inciting to violence, then there will be criminal sanctions under criminal laws that would apply to them. But we are in a very dangerous area. As Mark Liebler said, there's a misapplication by the commissioner of the legislation. It pins people up against the wall, and if they don't have the means to defend themselves, then they are in a very bad place under this legislation, a world of pain.
It's interesting, right-wing Tony, that I'm often in disagreement with right-wing religious groups. But on this particular issue, we're actually coming to agreement because they are also wanting these laws changed, and it doesn't work for them either. And because they want to make statements, and they're getting into trouble for those statements. And so it's one of the rare occasions where the iron fist and the velvet glove come into alignment with the likes of the ACL and various religious groups.
Yeah, well, you're going to have a lot more to be worried about because in Queensland, currently, the big problem is that Comrade Premier Palaszczuk...
That would be Palaszczuk for our southern or...
No, actually, I spent a couple of days, my wife and I, with a Polish man. Right. Who tells us that...
really? The correct pronunciation of Palaszczuk?
He says, as a Polish person...
Is Palaszczuk.
It's Palaszczuk, yeah, not Palaszczuk. And I would have thought if you're a Chook, you'd be proud to be a Chook, but who knows? Like, I mean, in any event, notwithstanding that the state of Queensland is the subject of CFMEU villainy, that the rail unions are controlling the rail system by enforcing the most outrageous agreement that says that you've got to keep offering the job to anybody, including cleaners, to be a rail driver as opposed to a competent person, and that the state super fund is being raided in order to try and balance a budget that they've got no hope
of. So notwithstanding
a
right-wing complaints about a left-wing government,
what we need, we've been told by Comrade Premier Palaszczuk, is a Bill of Rights, which I would have thought, given all the controversy about 18C, we do not need, but they're obviously looking, or quite apart from a public service-led recovery, she's looking for a lawyer-led recovery and a legal fee-led recovery, because...
I think I might rejoin... If a Bill of Rights comes into effect, I think I might rejoin the profession, Tony, and cash because in. And you might come out of retirement.
Correct. It may be a lawyer's party. I've read some of the stuff on that the Together Union have thrown together, and it would be an absolute nightmare for this state if we have a Bill of Rights. We are fine. We get by fine. There is no riots in the streets. People are looked after. We don't need it.
Right wing Tony, I'm going to bring you back at another time for a Bill of Rights rant.
Yep, I'm happy to rant.
But I haven't been able to slip in one of my anecdotes, so we've just got to walk this back a little bit and back to the motivation of the social justice warriors and why would they do this? You know, they're sort of adopting the victimhood of various groups and making it their cause and having their ego stroked and they're feeling good as a result, and that's perhaps the motivation. But typically that would be more of a female sort of response to, if you're sort of using the Munchausen, I keep pronouncing it difficultly, but it's Munchausen syndrome. So Gad Saad, this guy's talking about, also had a theory as to why men might get involved in this movement. And I thought you would find this theory particularly appealing, right-wing Tony, because this, and language warning, dear listener, this, if you're in the car and there's kiddies in the car, you know, turn off the radio. Okay, you've done that? Right. So Gad Saad's theory on a male motivation in this social justice warrior situation relies on a strategy, and it's called the sneaky fucker strategy. Tony, have you heard of the sneaky fucker strategy?
No, I haven't, but I've probably met a couple of them.
So this is actually prevalent in the fish world, Tony. So so what you've got in the fish world is you've got, say, a dominant male fish with, you know, big garish colours and a big animal sort of thing, and the females might be a much smaller or differently coloured fish. And what sometimes develops is that there are males which will disguise themselves as a female. And so it's able to swim past the male and get into the harem that the male is protecting and, of course, get up to all sorts of mischief in there and by disguising himself as a female. And Gad Saad's theory on the social justice warrior male motivation in this sphere could be that they're sort of ingratiating themselves with a lot of females, and that's why they're doing it. So that's the sneaky fucker strategy.
Look, Gad may be right. I don't know. My personal view of the social justice warrior is that they're a group of people that can't cut it in the real world. They ordinarily don't get jobs that are really meaningful or achieve anything, and they therefore gravitate to these sorts of things because, as you said, they need their ego stroked, and this is a useful way amongst Prosecco sipping socialists to make each other feel good about themselves and that they've actually achieved something today.
Prosecco?
Yes, they've moved on from Chardonnay. It's now Prosecco. Yeah, well, there you go. But
we better wind this up.
Yeah, we do have to.
I think we'll conclude Right Wing Tony on that note, and perhaps, well, we'll talk at another stage about the need for a post-identity liberalism.
I'll be up for it.
Right Wing Tony, you've lived up to your name. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It just, it'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation. So you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners. And that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.